listening to the Career Jump Podcast. Insights, interviews, and success stories to inspire and give you the edge when you make your next career jump. Hosted by your career concierge, Andrew McCaskill.
Hello, and welcome back to the Executive Career Jump Podcast. I'm your host and career concierge, Andrew McCaskill, and I'm very pleased today to have Jessica Lee Suffolk with me. How are you doing, Jess?
Hi, Andrew. I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
We're doing really good. We're both a bit sunburnt, aren't we, from the first heat wave?
Yeah, I got a bit of the lobster flush on today.
We have, yeah. But apart from that, we're great, and it's good to see the sun shining. Thanks for taking the time to come on this episode. And just for any of our listeners that aren't currently following you or connected, tell us a bit more about you and what you get involved with.
Sure. So I'm currently a partner for a company called Tessient for the People and Culture Practice. We are a business change and transformation consultancy, and we recently set up in the People and Culture Practice in December time. So yeah, it's been an exciting journey so far, but we've been going for about a year and a half now. So we are a really interesting ace of growth at the moment, which I'll talk to you about in more detail, I'm sure.
No, well, we're very much looking forward to it. And your background prior to that, tell us a bit more about your own career.
Sure. So I've been doing for about 8-9 years recruitment, search and selection, HR, change and transformation. I actually started off doing an acting career before recruitment. So that changed quite quickly. I started off writing scripts for children, clowning scripts, actually, in comedy. So yes, you might see little clowning snippets throughout this podcast. But yeah, a fabulous career in recruitment. Then ended up doing into this management consultancy, and I have also just become an accredited coach.
What made you want to become an accredited coach? It's a good move. What made you want to do that?
Yeah. I think for about 2 years ago, I met somebody who was a coach, and we had a great conversation. It really inspired me. And I realised I was doing a lot of the behaviour, shall we say, of being a coach anyway. And so during the pandemic, of course, I had to a bit of a talk to myself about, wow, you know, how, you know, are any of us going to have any roles going forwards? What's going to happen? So I just thought I'd take the plunge, started looking at courses and things, and decided to do it. So joined a coaching course, thoroughly loved it. And probably about 2 months ago, I got my accreditation, and I'm now going on to do the postgrad at Chester University.
And what did you love about it?
I loved the space and time that you give somebody in a coaching session. And actually, it's all around the questions, the quality of the questions that you are asking. I think being in recruitment for quite some time, sometimes you are talking a lot and you're trying. Yeah, everything's really fast paced. And I think almost to flip that on its head and, you know, take a step back, have that one to one with somebody, and to really listen to what they're actually saying and listen to what you're, you know, what they're perhaps not hearing or seeing, and being able to almost empower somebody to relook at, you know, how to understand themselves better. Yeah, I get a lot of fulfillment from that.
No, I totally agree. And it marries my own experience. So I think just in general, this active listening, the two ears, one mouth piece is so important. We even talk about it from an interview point of view, that candidates need to be thinking about the questions they ask even more than the answers they give, because that will make the interviewer feel very different. If you question well, you'll tend to do well in the interview. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely would agree with that. Yeah. And I think actually answering the questions as well, and vice versa. Because I think if someone asks you a powerful question, it really puts you think, oh, I wasn't expecting that. And you always get a little hint of excitement, don't you? So yeah, absolutely.
Yep, you do. But it's a good point about actually answering what's been asked rather than what you want to answer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two different things.
Yeah, very different things. And I think, you know, when we're looking at attributes for when we're interviewing, I think that that's definitely one of them, I would say, is actually, you know, answering questions that are being asked properly and being yourself. Because I think we've all probably sat through interviews in the past with candidates where we think, oh, come on, you know, I've met you, I know you, you are great. Just bring it out, be honest, listen. So yeah, it's more of us being cheerleaders, I think, along the way.
Yeah. I'm hoping that we are moving to a stage where people do feel they can be a little bit more authentic in their interviewing. I'm hoping so. But what do you think gets in the way of it then? Why do people turn into interview robots rather than the engaging people that you might have met as a headhunter?
You know, I think the biggest thing is fear. I think, you know, when you're speaking to candidates and perhaps they've not been through certain processes before, or especially if they really want this job, it's almost like, you know, this emotion overcomes them and you've met them perhaps for previous times or even, you know, for coffees, what have you. And yet suddenly when they need to perform, they just can't. And I just think that comes down to preparation, you know, almost having that one-on-one with the person to almost guide them through of what are you struggling with and getting your best bits out without it seeming like you're right, robotic and, oh, I'm reading from a script here rather than just being themselves. Because, you know, when we're interviewing, we want to think, can I work with this person? And yeah, I like what they're talking about. And yeah, we can have a good old chat about, I don't know, my dog Agatha or what have you. Not that I've got a dog called Agatha, but, you know, you just think, I just want it to be real. So yeah, absolutely.
Got it. Interesting that you mentioned fear, because yeah, a lot of the work that your organisation gets involved with is obviously with regards to change.
Yes.
Now, we've all been through quite a lot of change in terms of the workplace over the last 12 months, which in turn tells me there will be a lot of uncertainty and anxiety out there amongst the workforce. What do you think companies need to be doing, and what do you think we're going to see next in terms of this new chapter of work that we're going into?
I think, well, of course, we've had this, haven't we, for a long time, this whole digital revolution and almost making it more human. And I think what I'm seeing is the marrying between the two. And we did a webinar actually on this a couple of months ago, just how, you know, organisations, as much as they put, you know, money, let's say, into training on technology, training and upskilling and things, well, actually, what about, you know, the interpersonal skills? So when we talk about coaching and actually being able to look at, well, what's the emotional intelligence part perhaps that we need to marry with it? And I think that when we had a conversation around coaching, I do think that that style of management is going to be needed more and more, because, you know, certainly when we've all been working remote, let's be honest, we haven't got a manager. None of us have had managers here, you know, in our working environments day to day anymore. We can't just not, you know, go, hey, what did you think about this? We've lost that, right? So we've just literally got ourselves. And it's almost like when we do need to speak to someone, it's instant, but it's very intense. And then we switch off. So it's just a really different way of working. And I just think going forwards, we're going to need to learn how do we maneuver our relationships so that it's not so intense all the time, but at the same time we are still getting that, okay, there's not so much hierarchy, but you are here for me to lean on or to count on, or, you know, you're there for me for support as a coach, rather than I will tell you what to do because it's this, because I just don't think the way we're going, people want that anymore. You know, you look at the Gen Zs and the millennials, I mean, crikey, it's all about working smart. It's all about, you know, do more of what you love. You know, you hear these stories of these amazing 23-year-olds, you know, building these awesome empires and built and businesses. And then you've got, you know, these kind of CEOs who are wonderful, but it's like, you need to, how do we marry the two so that actually, you know, it's a comfortable environment for everyone within an organization. And we're using a bit of the way the Gen Zs are now thinking, but at the same time, you know, the realization that the CEOs, et cetera, or more of the mature employees in the organization, they have got that experience that you can, you know, lean on and trust and things like that. So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting place to work at the moment.
And so how on earth do we close that gap? Because that is the challenge, isn't it? You've articulated that brilliantly, that gap between the leadership team and early career professionals. How do we close that gap?
It is definitely, it's a big one. I think it's on everyone's minds. I think it's certainly on my mind. I think it's looking at, it's relearning. I think it's unlearning and relearning things we know. You know, what we have learned from this whole pandemic is we haven't had reams of data that we can look on to say, right, how do we, you know, I know from learning from X, Y, and Z that we need to do this, or we've got these options that we can, you know, move forwards with. And actually, to make our organization most effective, we've just got to almost go with our gut and, yes, learn from other organizations what's working, what isn't. But it's almost a lot of trial and error, right? It's almost, let's just be honest with our employees and say, look, we're not going to get this right, but we're going to give this a go. And this is the reason for it. So we're all on this journey together. And actually, if we realize that's not right for us, we'll change, we'll make a change. We're not scared of that. And I think it's that, you know, that communication piece, which I think employees really appreciate, actually, that, you know, they are being thought of, they are seen, they are heard, they have a voice. And I think that's what a lot of the Gen Zs, millennials, I'm a millennial, you know, they want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to feel valued, they want to know the organization they're working in, you know, cares about certain things, you know, sustainability, for example, huge. I recently did a sustainability course with Harvard and it was amazing. And what I learned was just the fact that, you know, this is huge at the moment. This isn't something that, you know, we just think, oh, it's a, you know, it's almost a bit of a craze or it's the hot topic of the month. Like, this isn't going to go away. So, you know, it's how do we ingrain that into what we're doing so that we are all part of a larger cause that makes a difference.
100%. Love that. And there's no doubt that young people, but also just people in general,
are
choosing to work for organizations that they feel have a genuine mission and are good corporate citizens, right? Like, I really do see that shift over probably the last 10 years where they'll take less salary to work for something that feels more purpose driven. In fact, it's probably the most common thing we get with our coaching clients is people saying, I'm working for a big company, but I want to find more meaning in my work.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, I was reading some stats saying that you're right, you know, millennials and Gen Zs would rather, you know, 70% would rather choose an organization that are showing they value sustainability and it's one of their core values rather than, you know, going to, you're right, you know, some other organization who are saying they're doing all these things, they don't quite believe it. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. And I think organizations, when it comes to talent, spotting new talent, you know, kind of wanting to grow the right sorts of people in our organizations, I think it's something that certainly we need to be really mindful of.
Totally agree.
Hey, everybody, it's Andrew here. Just wanted to very briefly interrupt this podcast episode to tell you a little bit more about our Career Jump Club. So our Career Jump Club was created to help job seekers understand what they want and how to get it, right? So becoming a club member is a great move if you're looking to get the clarity and confidence in order to secure your next role. With the membership, you get a number of different things. So first thing you get is access to our online platform, which has over 30 videos, 40, 50 different templates, workbooks, and it takes you through everything from sort of understanding what you want to how to position your CV and LinkedIn, how to interview, how to close offers and negotiate better salaries, a full end-to-end job search course effectively for senior leaders. So you get that, you get a fortnightly group coaching call, which is with me and with the other members, where we bounce around best practice, share slide decks, share techniques, and share the latest data on what's working for people. And you get to, most importantly, become part of our closed LinkedIn group and our closed community. And in there is where the magic often happens, because you get people referring each other into opportunity, supporting each other, and just sharing. And that's what it's all about. So if you're financially able and you'd like to invest in your job search, head on over to www.execcareerjump.com, all one word, /club, and you'll find the landing page and come and give it a go. We'll see you in there. Anyway, back to the pod.
What else are you seeing in terms of your day-to-day work, like trends, anything interesting? I think sustainability is a brilliant one that we've covered off. Is there anything else you're seeing in your day-to-day work from a trends perspective?
It's an interesting one. So because we're a management consultancy and my background was recruitment, I've almost had to re-educate in a different way of, you know, the way I work and et cetera. And it's really interesting hearing people's new ways of thinking around, well, how can I work in a management consultancy then? You know, how does it work if they're not used to kind of that environment before? And I think more and more people that I'm talking to are interested in doing bite-sized pieces of work, having multiple clients at one time, not necessarily having to, do you know what, I'm going to go and work in this organization for 2 to 3 years or even longer. And I know some people are thinking, 2 years, that's not even a long time in an organization. Well, do you know what, it's even less now. You know, it's almost, you know, why would I just want to stay with one organization when actually I have choice? I can go and work for, you know, 5 or 6 different organizations. Maybe, I don't know, somebody wants to go into something to do with automation. Yeah. In automation, etc. And you just think, well, you can do that. You can go and do 3 days a week with one client, 2 days with another. And clients we're noticing are coming to us, and that seems to be the norm, this bite-sized piece of work.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because when I entered the workforce, I think I qualify as a millennial by about 11 months. By about 11 months, I think I just sneak in, depending on the definition. But anyway, when I started working, portfolio careers,
yeah,
where you had a number of different organisations that you served in some kind of way,
yeah,
were what you did in your 60s. And so it's kind of like you did a grad scheme, you worked for a big company, you then maybe did some interim consulting, and then you did portfolio. That was kind of the career journey of, you know, the masses in terms of what success looked like. And I feel like that's almost being flipped on its head.
Yeah.
Like I know 23, 24 year olds that work in that gig economy on demand space with a portfolio of clients.
Yeah.
So they've got a portfolio career.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm seeing it now. You go on Instagram and it depends on who you follow and things, but if you, you know, if you follow pages you don't normally follow and you look at all of these young kind of entrepreneurs and all sorts of, and you realize that they're doing exactly that. And it's all around this huge side hustle culture at the moment. You know, yeah, I might have a job Monday to Friday, but actually they're doing something else on the side as well, which, you know, of course, no conflict, but they're getting another kind of bit of something, you know, a bit of spark, a bit of energy somewhere else. I've just read actually a brilliant book called Working Hard or Hardly Working by Grace Beverly, who again is a wonderful example of an awesome entrepreneur who I think has had an awesome career already. I think she's like 23 or 24. And she talks about, you know, having micro passions. So, you know, rather than thinking we have to have one job that's going to be everything we ever wanted, you know, and if we don't reach that, well, guess what? You're going to be unfulfilled. Why don't we instead have a job? Fine. But why don't you find loads of micro passions within that job? So, for example, sustainability we spoke about. Well, how about you find out about sustainability in that business? What are they doing? Get involved in it. You know, feed lots of different passions that you have to have more a fulfilling, I suppose, ongoing fulfillment in general, just to be, you know, be more content with life and just, you know, feeling happier. And I think that's certainly, I've just resonated a lot with that. So, yeah.
Totally. And I can't believe she's only 23, 24. She's
done it. Amazing. She's amazing.
Yeah. I had no idea that. I thought she was probably 6 years older than that. So only based on her achievement, not anything else. It's incredible. Yeah. And I think that's a really good philosophy in life in general, what you've just said there, because even when it comes to relationships of any type, rather than expecting your friend or your partner or your parents or your spouse or whoever to be the perfect human, in the same way, it's like, it's okay. What I get from this relationship is this piece. What I get from this relationship is this piece. Like, you don't need to find somebody who is the perfect human, right? They don't exist. My wife will tell you that. They definitely don't exist. So it's about finding somebody where you can get what you need from a number of different relationships and depressuring each of those relationships individually. That's the same with work. That's the same. It's kind of stop looking for the perfect job, create a work ecosystem that gives you the perfect job from a number of sources.
Absolutely love that. Yeah, exactly that. And I think that what this pandemic has certainly taught a lot of people is to believe in that and just have that choice back and that free feeling of, ooh, okay, I could do a bit of this, I could do a bit of that. And, you know, almost like you say, creating their own ecosystem, which is wonderful.
It really is. It's exciting. So I want to get a bit more tactical with you and rack your brains for some help for our people in transition. So a lot of the people who listen to this are currently looking to get hired. LinkedIn. What's your thoughts on LinkedIn? What should people be doing on LinkedIn? Tell us about the platform and what your thoughts are.
Oh, LinkedIn. So I think that LinkedIn is clearly a huge tool, which let's be honest, you know, everyone's on it now, aren't they? I think that people just have to be careful how they come across on LinkedIn, because I think people need to be honest. So in their bio, you know, I go on a lot of profiles and people either don't write anything on there or they don't really make it as personable around, you know, what they're currently doing. And I just think it takes not a lot of effort, but just to keep updating it, because people do read that. So, you know, I don't know if you've done a recent course or an extra something on the side or a certification, put it on there, because people want to know, what are you about? You know, you're not just defined by your qualifications only or your employment for the last 3 years. I want to know a bit about you. So talk to me, give me a bit of a flavor and write it as if you're not a robot. I'm not reading the same, you know, bio that I've probably read 20 other times, that it's you. And I think that goes a long way for me. And that's something that if I read something and I can tell someone's put the effort in and it's up to date, then it really goes a long way with how I perceive people on LinkedIn.
Totally agree. It's back to your earlier point around just bringing yourself to the situation and being unapologetically you in a way that's going to work for you. So I love that. And I guess that also goes for CVs. Any other, you would have looked at hundreds of CVs in your career. Any other thoughts around what a good CV looks like or what you used to look for in CVs?
Gosh, achievements is the, I know it sounds so cliche, but honestly, achievements. I would speak to some amazing people and they would, in person, they would tell me all this wonderful, you know, I've done this, I've implemented this in this budget with on time, etc. I'm like, great, great, writing everything down. And then you look on their CV and you think, where's this then? Where's that? Where's that you've just told me? And I think, you know, come on, you know, I'm here to help you, but you've got to help yourself. You know, I can get you to the interview and I can give you all the research that you need to, you know, in the sense of what you need to look at, and I can help prepare you. But at the end of the day, you're on your own when it comes to the interview, and you've got to be the person that they want to buy, that they want to spend the next X amount of years working with. So, you know, it's almost like to help yourself, you know, just be really, really open and honest with what you've implemented, what you've done, what you've achieved. And I think that's, you know, not just also around career, but also personal too. You know, if you've got a passion in something and you've decided to go the extra mile and do something in that, just put it on your CV, because I love to read things like that. You know, when someone's gone and done, I don't know, a course in, I don't know, food, or I don't know, whatever they love doing. And I just, I love questions around, oh, tell me more around that. And I just think that's the sort of people clients want to see and want to hear about, the, you know, someone who's real and doing lots of things rather than I am just this person and I have only just done this, you know. So, yeah.
So cut the generic stuff out, cut the fluff out, but leave in the outcomes and achievements and leave in the more personal human side again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a really good summary. Very, very good. What have you got in terms of recommendations for books or podcasts or things that you listen to or inspire you in some sort of way?
Oh, so books, I think I just mentioned Grace Beverly's book, and that's literally only just come out. And I'm really up for that as well. I think that, you know, you have those books that are, so Atomic Habits, James Clear. So that's my little go-to. Love that. Love a habit tracker. But at the same time, I think that books that are recent is also really important, because, you know, you don't want to just have your three favourite books that were written how long ago, as much as they might have, you know, absolute jewels in there. I think it's interesting to hear, you know, people's point of view of what's going on now that's current. So try and mix it up a little bit. What are the books? Drive. So the interesting, yeah, Daniel H. Pink. I love that one. Depends, really. I mix it up a lot. I started a book club, actually, during the pandemic. And it's wonderful because it's a wonderful group of girls, and the books that they sometimes throw in there, it wouldn't always be my choice, but it's good because it tests you on what you're reading. So, yes, a couple of thrillers and things. So, yeah, I would say those books are probably the ones that I go back to.
Love it. And any other tips for people that are looking for a job? Anything else that you think they should think about, or any learnings from when you were doing the headhunting?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is really knowing what you want. I think what I've learned in my career is many times I will have met wonderful people and I've interviewed them and they're telling me they want this role, but I just feel like that's not what they really want to be doing, or perhaps can just see that when they're answering questions, they're not really in it. And part of me wants to say, can I just stop this? Why are you here? What do you actually want? You know, and who are you doing this for? Are you doing this for yourself? Or, you know, why do you feel like you need to go for this role? And to be honest, that's probably not the normal questions you would think I should be asking. But it's because I just think that, you know, you've got to know what you want, and it's got to be aligned for either the work you're doing or what you want to go into an organisation to do, because then you're going to give it your best, right? And, you know, certainly the organisation you go to are going to appreciate that. And I think that's the biggest thing for me, is just knowing what you want and you're clear around that, so that then everything else is just aligned, because it's extremely difficult when you're working with somebody who you don't quite feel they're 100% in it. And you're almost trying to, you know, I suppose, be that voice for them. And the client knows, the client can tell, you know, it's obvious. So that would probably be my biggest piece of advice, is be true to you.
That's awesome. Really, really, really good advice, because you can only actually be resilient in roles that have a meaning to you.
Yeah.
That's how you avoid, how people get burnt out and stressed, is by having to do a lot of work for something they don't truly believe in, or it doesn't align with them. They're trading their time for money. So that is just awesome advice. Love that. Very good. Okay. So what about the rest of the year then? What skills are you going to develop next? What kind of goals have you got for the rest of 2021? What does that look like?
Goals. I love the word goals. So we touched on my coaching. Definitely. So we're still building the People and Culture Practice of Tessian. So we're on this amazing journey at the moment, which is just going great. We've just announced a board advisory service offering. So that's exciting. And then the next hurdle will be, developing the coaching practice through what we offer. And I think that certainly I feel, as we're talking about aligning with your values, is what I believe in. And I think, you know, more organisations, you ask, you know, people within their organisations how they feel, you know, if they're feeling, especially CEOs, it can be quite lonely at the top, you know, almost offering that support and that deeper level, you know. So I think the coaching is definitely on my radar this year. And I don't want to do too many things because I think I want to do one thing very well. And it's something that you constantly are developing. So, that would be 2021 is coaching for me.
Exciting. Well, I'm excited to see what you do about it. If anybody wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Just call 079. No, joking.
You probably don't want to be giving your phone number out live.
No, I'm joking. I wouldn't know. Get in touch with me. So my LinkedIn, please just send me a message on LinkedIn. That's probably the best thing. I always go back to people, and my email's also on the front of my bio as well. So yeah, you can catch me that way. And then hopefully we can have a good discussion.
Absolutely. And Tessian, if people want to find out more about the organisation, what's the web address for that one?
Tessian.com. www.tessian.com. Yeah, have a look on our website and you can just send us an email through there and it'll take us straight through to either myself or Matt, who are in the organisation, and we will come back to you. We're pretty quick actually at that. So go through our website or on my LinkedIn page.
Well, it's been awesome having your energy on here today. We really appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure you've given people some thought-provoking stuff to ponder on. So thank you so much. If you're not following Jessica already, make sure you do. Get in contact with her directly and we'll catch up very soon. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Andrew.
You've been listening to the Career Jump Podcast with Andrew McCaskill. For more resources and information, just head over to the Career Jump website at www.execcareerjump.com to supercharge your job search and start making moves. Let's get to work.